Welcome to Kaleidoscope EDU. My name is Emily Wong. I'm a second-generation Chinese-Canadian and first-generation teacher. Kaleidoscope EDU is dedicated to amplifying the voices of Canadian women of color teachers. I'm here, you're here, we are here. And teaching is a great gig. Come join us. Welcome to the second episode of Kaleidoscope EDU. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined with a fellow University of Ottawa teacher candidate, Fidumo Diria. Hi, Fidumo. Can you introduce yourself?
Thank you. Hi, Emily. Hi, everyone. My name is Fidumo Diria. I am a first-year teacher candidate here at the University of Ottawa in the primary junior stream and in the global cohort. So thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Awesome. So I sent you the intro clip when I invited you to be on the podcast. And what compelled you to say yes?
Honestly, I listened to your clip. I thought it was great. And I said yes because why not? Why not have an opportunity to share your experiences on a platform where the, I don't want to say the target, but you're given the space to be able to talk freely without shying away from having to maybe offend anyone because of the experiences that you've had. It's just like a safe space. So,
yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. And it's so exciting because actually Fidumo was telling me earlier that this is your first ever appearance on a podcast, and that you're not used to listening to them either. So you're really taking, I think, a really big risk here. I mean, in a good way.
No, for sure.
Risk taking is good.
For sure. I'm, like I said, I'm excited for this whole experience.
Cool. All right. That's awesome. So I want to take you back to the very beginnings of your educational journey. So what was your formal schooling experience like, sort of K to 12, post-secondary?
Okay, so that was a very, very long time ago. Honestly, from what I can remember, it was all positive. I came to Canada in the late 80s when I was four. I'm aging myself here, but that's okay. So I did a little had ESL when I first came in into kindergarten, and then moved to the West End of Ottawa a couple years after.
Yeah, and you've always been in Ottawa?
I've always been in Ottawa, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Neat.
So yeah. Supportive teachers, supportive staff, supportive everything. But at the same time, a lot of it was hidden because my parents were very involved. So I honestly can't tell you what they had to endure or in terms of like fighting for which classes I should be in, what subjects I can take. I can't comment on that because I don't know. Anything that I've always wanted to take and pursue, I've been supported on the home front and also at the school.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So when did you first start thinking that you might want to be a teacher?
So it was very recent. So teaching as a profession has always been something that in my family has been celebrated. Like it is a great career choice, along with, you know, being a doctor, engineer, whatever the case may be. So I knew that if I pursued that avenue, I would get the support that I needed. In terms of when did I realize that I wanted to be a teacher and pursue this career for myself, I would say 2016. So not too long ago. And what ignited that spark was I lost some dear friends of mine passed away, and it was the first time that I had to deal with losing someone that I was so close to. And each of them left such a beautiful legacy in the community, where not only did they give back while pursuing their own interests, but they had such a presence, I should say. So for me, it got me thinking, like, life is short. life is so short. What can I do to benefit society? Right? We're not meant to, well, this is my beliefs. Sorry, I'm putting on everybody, but I truly believe we are, as human beings, one of the greatest creations, and our moment in time on this earth is bigger than this moment. What am I going to give society? So I knew I didn't want to be a doctor, wasn't going to be an engineer, but in some way I wanted to benefit society in a positive way. So I thought, and I looked back, and I was thinking, who were a positive influence in my life? And I remembered my teachers, and I said, you know what, teaching. And I also wanted a career choice that didn't limit where I can go in the world. So if I was in Timbuktu or up in the Arctic, anywhere, that I'd be able to do what I love to do. And so I settled on teaching. And by settle, I don't mean it was just a choice, like a fleeting choice, but it's actually something that I am happy with, I'm proud of, and I'm excited on the journey. So it was very recent.
Yeah.
Yeah, long-winded way to say that I recently decided to become a teacher.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Fadumo and I, this is our first meeting in person ever, and I had no idea you were going to just be so open and share that incredible story. And yeah, that's huge. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. How does being a woman of color, if you identify as such, inform your teaching practice today? Did that change anything or impact the way that you see students or that you teach students in your practicum?
So in terms of presence and representation, I do see that there is a huge lack of... So growing up, I didn't have teachers that looked like me. And it's funny because I didn't see that there was anything wrong with it. I just thought that was the norm, right? As I got older, I realized that it would have been nice to see, you know, a woman, a Black Muslim woman wearing hijab, teaching me. So now when I am in the schools doing my practicum, it's still unfortunately pretty much the same. I'm kind of like the one odd person. I don't see a lot of people that look like me, but that's also something that I've been used to all my life. So I'm not saying that I am unaware that I am a one of few, but it's better than what it was before. And it's a testament to how times are changing. And I'm excited for what's to come. So.
Mm-hmm. We're making faces at each other. I thank you for sharing that. And that was really a big part of why I started this podcast, is that, you know, we often hear in education that it's important for students to have role models who look like them. And I think the same is for just the teaching staff. It's I'm at the very beginning of my career, and I'm wanting to know that there are other people with similar cultural backgrounds, similar beliefs, who have been through a more similar journey to my own, and maybe that they would understand certain things that come up just in a different way than more like racialized white teachers might have experienced.
Right.
So yeah, it really is that representation piece. So this is a tough question, and I should work on answering it myself, because last week Hoda turned it on me and I wasn't really sure what to say. But I'm going to ask you anyway. So my next question is, what are your hopes or your vision for sort of the future of Canadian women of color teachers?
Normalcy. I think that's the biggest thing. I want it to be normal to see teachers that look like us in that space. One amazing thing that I'll share is when I started my practicum this year, as soon as I entered the classroom, I had kids come up to me, "Oh my God, are you Muslim?" And I'm like, "Yes, I'm Muslim." And they're like, "I'm Muslim too." And then another kid, "You're Muslim?" "Yes, I'm Muslim. I'm Muslim too." And just that excitement on their face of seeing someone that shares like a faith, the same faith as them. And then the next week when I went back, one of the kids came up and greeted me in the Muslim greeting of Assalamu Alaikum. At that point, I knew and I realized that, you know what, and I go back to what I said before, it would have been nice to see someone that looks like me, or even, it doesn't have to be like a Muslim woman, but even like a Muslim man. I remember in high school, I think we just only had one racialized teacher who was a man, and I want to say that I think he was from Guyana, and that was it. When it came to racialized women of color, there weren't any. Yeah. So in terms of hopes and dreams, that's what I hope for. I hope for the faculty, regardless of what institution that you work for, reflects the classrooms and the individuals that take up that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a really great answer. I did have an experience. I mean, the student didn't say it in so many words, but it was exam time when I finished my practicum, and there was a student who was kind of, you know, making sad faces like, "Oh, I'm going to miss you." And I said, "Yeah, you know, I'm going to miss you too, right?" And I wondered if this student had ever experienced another teacher who looked like her, right? She was Nepali, so it was a little bit different. I'm mm-hmm. Chinese, mm-hmm. but, you know, features are similar, and yeah, it makes me wonder. And I thought about it as well in terms of when you're interacting with students, if you're someone who looks like their relatives, maybe that changes the way they view you in terms of threats even, mm-hmm. right? If you're, you know, being firm with a student, being strict with a student, because sometimes you have to be, there might be a sort of different understanding of that relationship if you look more similar.
No, I hear that. And I also feel like it's good for the parents too, to see not only on a on that side of things, but also to see that their child can realize that teaching is also a career option for them in the future. That hey, like, oh, I have Mysteria, I can probably be a teacher too, and she's wearing her hijab, and she's still I just want everybody to know that they can be whatever they can be whenever they can be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So in terms of this vision of normalcy, what do you think might be one thing that teachers could do maybe next week to kind of move the needle in that direction?
In terms like in their bringing it to their classroom?
Yeah.
Honestly, before the classroom, one thing that I keep reminding myself and I hope to carry with me into my own classroom is the drive to learn. Like, we have to, as individuals, learn about the society that we live in, the makeup of our classrooms, the different cultures and experiences that we share. So what can we do next week? I mean, it is Black History Month. I would love for teachers to look into bringing an aspect of that into their classroom, and not with the narrative that, hey, it's Black History Month, so we're going to be celebrating this, this, and this. But it's Black History Month, so we're going to amplify maybe and share more, but also carry it out throughout the year. Just be more aware, well-rounded individuals, and bring that to your classroom to empower your students to become well-rounded individuals that are not only occupied, I guess, with what's in front of them or in their own community, but also be aware of what's happening in other communities as well. Like a global, mm-hmm. global awareness.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Nice. That is an awesome answer. So I like serious conversation as much as the next person. But I also do want this podcast to reflect some of the everyday just absurdity that happens in teaching. And it happens to, you know, women of color just as much as anyone else. So I have two definitely less serious questions that I would like to ask. And the first one is, what was your biggest lesson flop and how did you recover?
So I'm very new to this whole teaching experience. So if I had to choose one, I think it was something, I'm still learning like the whole science behind teaching, mm-hmm. right? I find myself telling the kids what they need to know and what they need to do rather than teaching them what they need to do and what they need to know. So that's something that I am working on. But in terms of flops, I would say maybe not recognizing or foreseeing that some students might finish a task earlier than others, mm-hmm. and not having mm-hmm. something in place for those that finished early to busy themselves with. So
yes,
I'm grateful for my associate teacher who was right there and had another suggestion for that. Another thing too is I forget that kids are kids, you know, after a certain time in the day, they get tired, they get restless. So we have to not be so rigid with our curriculum. And again, that's something that I learned from my associate teacher. And she recognizes that if you find that the kids are not paying his attention or restless, we would take a break and just go outside for a little bit, get the energy back up, let them release that energy, and then they'll come back into the classroom and then we'll start teaching again. So that balance of knowing that, you know, you do have a job to do, you do have to teach, but at the same time they're children, mm-hmm. So you also have to recognize that and work with that.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that'll come with time, mm-hmm. and even for myself, like something I've always struggled with is timing, mm-hmm. In terms of creating my own lessons, because I don't always know how long it'll take students to do certain tasks. And what I've found most often in the past year is realizing that I have so much, you know, background knowledge that I sort of falsely assume that they have or that they kind of understand. And so, you know, I might be trying to do something that's way above their heads and not realize that there's all this background that I have to do. And eventually we get there and I'm getting a lot better at figuring that all out. But it's definitely, you know, a learning curve. But you'll get there. We'll get there. Eventually. So my second question, and this should be a good one, is what is the funniest thing that a student has said to you in the past, recent past?
I had one student ask me why I wear this on my head, and I was like, oh, my hijab. And they're like, yeah, why do you wear that? I'm like, oh, it's because, you know, it's part of my religion. They're like, but why? I'm like, because it's part of my religion. I really don't know. Still, I'm still navigating how you can talk to kids about religion and stuff like that. So I just kept it short and brief. And then the student went on to say, yeah, but the only people that I see that wear that always have brown skin. And I'm like, that's not true. I showed you guys a video recently about, you know, because we were talking about Eid and the celebrations in the Islamic faith. And I was like, remember the video that I showed you? It had people from all over the world, all different colors. He's like, no, Mysteria, they all have brown skin. And then I paused because I was like, when I was 7 years old, all of the Muslim women that I saw wearing hijab look like me. And it's true, they all had brown skin. So I couldn't even argue with them. So I just smiled and I said, don't worry. There's everyone of every color wears hijab. And then I just kind of like walked off. But it was funny because I'm like, it's true. I didn't honestly know that there was Muslims from all over the world until I gotten older. Yeah, so it was funny.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really interesting. I mean, there was I had an experience once when I was tutoring, and a little boy had, Asian people have eyes that are shaped a little differently, and kids being who they are sometimes will sort of pull their eyes out. Mm-hmm. And I had an experience where a little boy did that to me, but then I was talking to, and he was Somali actually, and I was talking to someone about it recently, and she asked me whether I thought that gesture was, you know, malicious.
Right.
Because I had always in my mind thought that it was, because it, you know, people had done it to me at school when I was in elementary school, you know, once or twice it had happened. And so I had always thought that it was this malicious thing. And so when this person I was talking to, she asked me whether I thought it was malicious, and I said, you know, maybe. But then I thought about it, and I thought, well, maybe, you know, he doesn't see Asian people on a regular basis. So, and he's little, right? If you're 6 years old and all you see are people who look like you, and then all of a sudden you start going out into the world, into schools that are very diverse, and seeing all these different people with different, you know, facial features, different colored skin. And then you think like, well, maybe it wasn't actually malicious. I don't know. But it does kind of go to your point. Like, it's so interesting being in an environment where there's so much diversity. And I know that one of my professors last year really emphasized that this is a very unique situation that we are in, even in Canada, in Ottawa, that there are so many different cultures living in one place and interacting with each other, and that is quite unique. It doesn't happen in most places of the world, so it's having to navigate that is really interesting.
Yeah,
that was definitely not funny, but that's okay. we can be serious too. So, as my last question, what piece of advice or, you know, hard-earned wisdom do you have for any women of color who are considering a career in education?
Good question. I don't know if I have any words of wisdom, because I'm still learning myself. And in terms of advice, I don't think... I know you said specifically for women of color, but I think it's for all individuals. Just never forget that you're worthy and that you matter and that you are, I don't know how to say this, but you, like, okay, so it can be tough for a certain group of people to pursue certain dreams, but I am of the belief that what is for you will always be for you. And yes, there you may get barriers, you may feel that it's not, but it is. So I would say just work hard, work super hard. You may have to work a little bit harder than most, but definitely work hard and know that you're worthy, know that you matter, and know that you belong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that is really, really wonderful. And I hope that when I grow up, I can be as wise as you are.
I'm still learning, but thank you.
Yeah. Well, Fadumo, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for taking this huge, just risk in a good way. We always talk about, well, I don't know. I think I grew up with perceiving risk as sort of a negative, scary thing. And I think that's changing as I, you know, jump into this world of education and Twitter and all this stuff. And I am starting to see risk as more of a positive thing. It's a, you know, you're stretching out of your comfort zone, and that's awesome. So thank you so much for coming and doing this with me. Now, how can listeners get in touch with you?
All right. So I am on Twitter. My tag is Miss Vidumo. And so Twitter, I think, would be the best way.
Okay.
And
great.
Don't hesitate. If you do want to get in touch, shoot me a little message and I'll be more than happy to respond and connect. And I want to thank you, Emily, for creating this space and allowing us to share our experiences and in some cases giving a voice to the voiceless, because it's hard what we do, and it's not easy, but it's worth it. So thank you.
I totally agree. Thank you so much. I want to extend my thanks to everyone in the Voice Ed Radio and Twitter communities who have supported me in starting this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'm your host, Emily Wong. Stay tuned for more Canadian Women of Color teachers on Kaleidoscope EDU. I'm here, you are here, we are here. Cheers.